Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Sunday, April 14th, 2013. This is episode 970. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Rackspace, the open cloud company. At Rackspace, build what you want, where you want, and how you want it, all backed by their world-renowned fanatical support. Try it today. Download the open cloud at rackspace.com/open. And by Ting.com. Ting is a new mobile phone service that just makes sense. Save money with Ting. You pay for what you use, and you don't need to sign a contract. Plus, Ting offers unlimited devices on one pooled plan. To save $25 on your first Ting device, visit techguy.ting.com. And by Hulu Plus. Watch as many TV shows as you want, anytime, anywhere, on your devices, all streamed instantly to you. Visit HuluPlus.com/twit to start your free two-week trial, or go to twit.tv and click the Hulu Plus banner. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. And this is the show where we talk about tech, computers, and the internet, and cell phones, and camcorders, and digital photography, home theater, all that jazz. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's my number if you'd like to join me with a question, a comment, a suggestion. If you like a little hand-holding on the information superhighway, that's what we used to say. I don't think anybody calls it the information superhighway anymore. Those were the days, the internet. I was helping my mom with passwords this morning, and I thought, you know, it might be a good thing to spend some time talking about passwords. I know it's a boring subject for some of you, but I think for a lot of us, it's more and more something you want to pay attention to. Just the other day, I got an email from Vudu. That's Walmart's video service where you can buy and rent digital movies and TV shows. And they said, I shouldn't laugh, but they said, oh, you better change your password because somebody broke in to our offices and stole the hard drives that contained all the customer information. And on there were passwords, customer credit cards, but only last four digits, things like that. So we're going to have you change your password. And I said, okay, that's fair. They said the passwords were encrypted, but, you know, just in case. What they didn't say is how they encrypted and all that stuff. Those are actually fairly relevant issues. If they encrypted it with, as is commonly done, with a certain kind of technology called an MD5 hash, then the bad guys could probably figure out what many of those passwords were in just a matter of hours, despite the scrambling. So, and this is what Walmart and Vudu neglected to mention, is how they did it. And you know, there's all sorts of encryption. They could have used a secret decoder ring. We don't know. Well, they didn't say. What you want to hear is passwords were encrypted with a MD5 hash or better, some stronger hash, and salted. But see, most people get that email. I don't know what they're talking about. Hash salting? What is it? Breakfast? So I understand why they didn't put that in there. But for purposes of people like me and security experts and so forth who want to know, well, what is the risk here? It would have been good to release that information. Of course, we know that what they did was kind of dumb because then when you log into your Vudu account, it says, hi, please enter your password so we can give you a new one. And that means they... That means they haven't changed the password. Because if the bad guy has my password, all he has to do is enter my password again and then create a new one. And I am no more secure than I was before. That's not how you do a password reset. That is not how you do it. It does nothing. So that doesn't give me a lot of hope that Voodoo did anything. So I'm just going to cancel my, I didn't need it anyway, my Voodoo account. Make sure there's no credit card information on there and so forth. So, but it raises an interesting issue, particularly if you, like many people, use the same password on multiple accounts. I've gotten the same email recently from Twitter, from Evernote, from Dropbox, all of whom had breaches that potentially leaked our passwords out to the bad guys. Now, it's one thing for Voodoo or Dropbox to say, okay, for that reason, we're going to reset your password. You have to start over. The bad guy then won't have a good password. But what if you used, as many do, the same password on other accounts? You know what I'm talking about. You got your favorite password. You use it many, many times. Well, you better think about changing that password everywhere. And do you remember where you used it and so forth and so on? So it's time, maybe this would be a good time to think about improving your password policies. Because, you know, passwords are pretty important. Depends what you're encrypting. I mean, I don't know if I care if somebody can log into my Wall Street Journal or New York Times account. That's not the end of the world. But if they log into my Amazon account, they could start ordering stuff. That could be a problem. If they log onto my Gmail account, they can use it to hack other accounts because they can send password resets to the Gmail account. You can imagine. If they log into your Apple iCloud account, they could erase all the computers associated with it. That wouldn't be good, would it? So it's time to start thinking about your password policies. And I'm going to have to, this is going to be an interesting assignment for you and for my mom. Because what I'm going to try to get her to do, and what I would encourage you to do today, this would be a good day to do it, take you about half an hour, is to start using a password vault. This is a program that stores your passwords in an encrypted fashion so that nobody can get into it. But, you know, my mom has a Microsoft Word document that she puts on everything, on her laptop, on her iPad, with all her logins and passwords on it. Now, all somebody has to do is get that document. She loses her iPad. That boom, it's over. So we want to store. I understand the need to store passwords. Who can remember them? In fact, the kind of catch-22 on this is the stronger, the better your password, the harder it is to remember. Because the best password is a totally random, lengthy, I'm talking 10, 15, 16 characters, totally random, containing upper and lowercase letters, numbers, and punctuation. That's the best password, but who can remember that? With a password vault, you make it, any good one, and I'm going to recommend LastPass is my favorite. It's free, and there's a premium version that's worth it. It's $1 a month. LastPass.com. You let LastPass generate those 16-character, very complicated numbers and remember them. And you don't have to remember them anymore. It just generates them. Make them long. Make it 16. Make it 20. It doesn't matter, right? Because you're not remembering it. LastPass is. There's only one password you have to remember. That's the password to unlock LastPass. Now, you're going to have to take it from me that LastPass does everything right. The way they store your password, the way they handle this stuff is done cryptographically, securely, intelligently. There's a lot of nice features. They even add, and I would recommend, second-factor authentication using the Google Authenticator. So you can say, it's not enough just to have my password. You have to also have my authenticator. You have to have my cell phone. Now we're talking. That's the safe that you keep your passwords in. But there's a risk. You know, when you have a safe in your house, you're pretty much telling the bad guy, if you could only get into this thing, everything I have of value is in there. It's kind of like saying, over here. So the safe better be well secured, right? You don't put everything in a strong box that you can unlock with the wire cutter. You put it in something, so because you're announcing, here's where everything is. Same thing with LastPass. Here's where everything is. So make sure you use a good, strong password with LastPass. And I'm going to talk a little bit about, probably not now, but a little later in the show, about how to make a password that you can remember, that you can, you know, you don't have to write down. You don't want to, look, last thing you want to do is put your LastPass password on a post-it note on your computer. You might, I mean, because then you're giving somebody the keys to the kingdom. Right? So if you're going to use LastPass, which I recommend, it stores, you never have to remember your passwords. It generates really good, long, random ones and a different one for every site, right? So it doesn't matter if somebody got your Voodoo account or stole hard drives from Voodoo, because that's all they got was the Voodoo account. You could change that and you're safe. You want to do this. You can download LastPass for free. And the nice thing, the reason I like LastPass, it works on every phone, every computer, and on the web. So your passwords are available to you everywhere. On your Android phone, on your BlackBerry phone, on your iPhone, on your Windows phone, on Windows Metro, on Macintosh. There's always a LastPass available. So you can always unlock your passwords and get it. And it's free. It's nice. It's free. And then come up with a really good, long, hard to guess, but easy to remember. That's the key password. Actually, ideally, it would be 16 random letters, numbers, and punctuation marks that you can memorize. That would be the best. But I know that that's hard. This is the tough part, right? How do we remember these things? So I'll talk a little bit during the show about ways, and maybe you'd share them with your technique with us, to create a memorable but hard-to-guess password. 8888-ASK-LEO, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number. We're having a lot of fun in the chat room, and I encourage you to visit the chat room if you've never done it. It's a little crazy. I know a lot of people get in there and go, whoa, because there's almost 1,000 people all talking at once. But once you kind of get used to it, it's really cool. So we're having a little conversation in the chat room about different ways to create a password you can remember. And we'll talk some about that later. Because you only have to create one now. If you're going to use LastPassword or 1Pass or KeePass or one of these password vaults, you only have to remember the password to the vault and then let that program generate everything else. So we're going to think of some good ways. I recommend LastPass and use it. It's wonderful. We're going to think of some good ways to come up with that one password. We'll talk about it as the show goes on. But I've got lots of calls. I want to get to them. Starting with Charlene in Westchester, New York. Hi, Charlene. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Good morning, Leo. Thank you for taking my call. I'm so excited.
Oh, yay. Woo. I'm so happy to have you. Thank you.
So I am in the market for a new laptop.
Okay.
And I was looking for a recommendation. I go to school online, so I use Blackboard.
Good.
I need a webcam. I'm looking for something along the 15 to 17-inch screen.
Okay.
My budget's somewhere around $1,000. And I'm a little bit conflicted whether I should do solid state or HDD, or maybe even a hybrid. I think Seagate, my husband was telling me about. I'm not a Mac user, so that's definitely not something I want to get into.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what processor, RAM, what am I looking for?
Yeah, I mean, and there's lots of choices depending on your needs. So you said 15 to 17 inches. You want a big screen, but that makes it less portable, right? So the bigger the screen.
In my house mostly for school.
Okay. So that's, there you go. That's one question. So sometimes people want an ultra portable, like I have this Acer S7, and it's very thin and light, and that's desirable if you're carrying it around. But if you don't care, then you can get a bigger screen, you can get more processor power, the battery life isn't as important, things like that.
Yeah.
You also made a very interesting question, whether you should use a solid state drive, which is much, much faster, but also more expensive for the capacity. I don't like the hybrids in general. I think your choice really is solid state or normal spinning drive. And nowadays, I don't build a computer or buy a computer that doesn't have a solid state drive, but it means you'll have less storage. Now, that may not be an issue. Blackboard is online. You know, word processing, you know, text documents aren't that big. Are you doing video or photography or anything like that that might take up a lot of space?
No, it's all word processing.
Yeah, then I would get a solid state drive. It makes a computer start up faster, makes it run faster. And, you know,
my laptop for like watching things on the web and things like that.
Yeah, that's fine. That doesn't take up any space. For that, you want a better screen more than anything else.
Okay.
The big question you didn't mention is Windows 7 or Windows 8. You pretty much have to get Windows 8 nowadays. You'd have to fight to get a Windows 7 machine.
Okay.
And I'm not crazy about Windows 8, but have you ever used Windows 8?
No.
It's going to be a bit of a stretch because you're used to older versions of Windows that were more traditional. And Microsoft is in the unfortunately, Windows is in a big transition right now. And that's you're going to be a little bit of the victim by buying now. It's one of the reasons I believe that PC sales have fallen dramatically in the last quarter. It's because people are not that they don't want computers anymore. That's one speculation is, oh, everybody's using a tablet. No, I think people like you need a laptop. You need a computer. But I think what the problem is, people are looking at Windows 8 going, gosh, it's so different. Do I want that? I don't know. And I think people are saying, let's take a wait and see on Windows 8. You need a laptop now, so I would go out and get one. The good news is that depressed market's good for you because it means prices will be lower.
Oh, great. Now, Blackboard, I use Blackboard online. That's not going to have a problem with Windows 8.
No, because it's anything that's web-based is going to look exactly the same as it always has.
Okay, great.
So Blackboard is going to go great with Internet Explorer, which is probably the browser you'll use since that's what pretty much everybody uses on Windows.
Yeah, that's what I have to use.
You have to. Really work for me. Yeah. Well, that's fine.
I like Chrome, but it doesn't work too well on Chrome.
Yeah, so you'll use it. But you know what? With Internet Explorer 10 on Windows 8 is fine. Nothing wrong with that.
Okay.
So here's a couple of answers. First of all, get an SSD. Second, I would suggest, and by the way, because of what you do, you can get an SSD that is 128 or maybe 240 gigabytes. No more. You don't need to get the giant terabyte drive because you don't store that much stuff.
No.
And that's the thing about SSD. They're super fast, but they're very expensive. Nobody buys a terabyte SSD, typically 256 gigs, something like that. Quarter of a terabyte, but that's plenty. Windows takes less than 100. That leaves you tons of space. And if you're just doing word processing, you don't need anything more fancy. So I would say SSD. Your processor should be an i5. That's smack dab in the middle of Intel's processor line. The i3 is artificially slowed down so they could make a cheap processor. I don't like it. The i7 is overkill for most people. It's what I use. Yeah, I'm a geek, and I use an i7, but that's more because I have more dollars and cents. No, because that's a privilege that I give myself. You're a geek. You can buy a faster computer than you really need. But i5 is fine.
Okay, great.
Now, if you're getting Windows 8, you want a touch screen. Just there's no way around that.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, unfortunately, Windows 8 is so touch-specific. Now, you can make Windows 8, and I think a lot of people do this. In fact, I'm about to do it with something called from a company called Stardock, Stardock, that will make Windows 8 behave almost identically to Windows 7, but you get the benefits of the new operating system without any of the negatives. So you want to go to Stardock.com and get the $50 utility that turns Windows 7 back, Windows 8 back into Windows 7. You don't have to get it right away. You may love Windows 8, in which case you don't need it.
Okay.
But just make a note that if this is really getting to be a problem, get Object Desktop. And it brings back the start menu. it makes you get back on the desktop. I mean, it just makes everything more like Windows 7. And I think that's going to be easy for you.
Okay, and what kind of RAM am I looking for?
Four gigs is plenty.
Oh, okay.
You can get more, but what happens is you get more RAM is more money, of course, and a small improvement. The biggest bang for your buck is 4 gigs.
Okay, 4 gigs. Now, what brand am I looking for? You mentioned touchscreen, so am I going to have to do something like, I don't know.
Lenovo's good. Dell has some good solutions. I like Lenovo a lot. And it's now the issue is going to be, I would say 15. Don't go with 17. And you want the highest resolution 15 you can get. 17's awfully big. You'll never carry that around. It's like a pizza box. I use an Acer. I'm very happy with. Asus is good too. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, our show today brought to you by our good friends at Rackspace.com. They decided to sponsor the podcast. I'm very grateful to them for doing it. Let me just get their lower third up. Where is it? It's in here somewhere. I got too many advertisers. I can't find anything anymore. That's a good thing. Rackspace is, you know, it's interesting that they're advertising on the radio show, on the podcast. I love it. RackSpace.com. Now, you might have heard the name. They're, they do cloud services, which would be web hosting, application hosting, database hosting. They call themselves the Open Cloud Company. And this is really important if you're a business that wants to use the cloud, and every business should be and is now moving to the cloud. That's point one. But also for application developers. Nowadays, they don't run their own servers. They go to companies like Rackspace with hosted applications. For databases, distributed databases, the same thing. Streaming rich media, SaaS hosting, software as a service. Rackspace is the... But here's why Rackspace is better than the others. Not all cloud providers are the same. Lots of them use proprietary technology. Now, that's not good for you. It means you're locked in to their stuff. What you want is an open solution, built on open standards, so you have the freedom to move around. Rackspace is the open cloud company. They've co-founded OpenStack with NASA, and they run the world's largest open cloud. You are not locked into anybody. You can move your apps, your code, your data, your website between multiple OpenStack-based clouds, public or private, on-premise even, or hosted, whatever you want, from another provider, sure. But you got to start at Rackspace. Go to rackspace.com/open. Download the Open Cloud. You probably stay with Rackspace because of their amazing, fanatical support. Famous all over the world. Rackspace. As Donald Kelly said in our chat room, they're very sassy. Rackspace.com/open. Thank you, Rackspace, for supporting the Tech Guy podcast. So we've been helping Charlene buy a laptop. It's kind of overwhelming these days. But you can narrow it down a lot by saying, I want a Windows 8 touchscreen laptop. And at that point, there really aren't that many choices. And I think Lenovo makes an excellent one, the X1 Carbon. I am loving this Acer S7, but this isn't exactly what Charlene wanted because it's an Ultrabook. It's thin and light, so it doesn't have an optical drive, for instance. It doesn't, the screen is only 13 inches, not 15. Although nowadays they're making screens, and this is one thing to watch out for with Windows 7. A lot of the Windows 7 laptops are very low resolution. Like, what is it, 1368 by 1320 by 768, something like that. Very low resolution. Don't do that. You've got to get at least a 1080p laptop, like 1920. By 1200 would be good. You want high resolution. The X1 Touch, I don't know what that is. I think that's higher resolution. The problem is higher resolution also means higher price. But it makes such a difference to have a high-res laptop. I'm a little disappointed at the number of low resolution. 1366 by 768, that's it. That's so low resolution. It's really a step back. Kind of puzzles me. But what it means is, you're exactly right, and the chat room's pointing this out, more pixels to push means you need a faster processor, you need a bigger battery, or you'll have less battery life and so forth. But I like it. I like to see a larger, higher-res display. I really do. When I see, you know, it's the same thing with these tablets now, where everybody's doing Retina tablets, even the phones now. The new Galaxy S4, the HTC One, these are 1920 by 1080 displays on a less than a 5-inch screen. So why would you want less than that on a 15-inch screen? It just doesn't make sense. I think the standards have changed. Perry in, how do you pronounce that? Scio, Oregon?
Scio.
Scio. S-C-I-O. Hi, Perry.
Howdy.
Welcome.
Listening to you here a little bit.
Good.
I remember when you called the super highway the dirt road.
Sometimes it still is. Depends on your provider.
Yeah, that's true. LastPass, been using that for a couple of years, thanks to you.
What do you think?
And my password is the VIN on my first Harley motorcycle.
That's pretty good. Now, it's all digits, which is a negative. Or maybe there's a couple of letters.
No, there's letters in
there. Okay, good.
Yeah.
That's good. And it's long. It's what, 12 characters?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, look, the ideal password is letters, upper and lower case, numbers, and punctuation. And 12 is good, but I use 16. And the real trick is, well, how do you remember something that long? You remember your VIN because you memorized it.
Exactly.
And that's not a bad way. If you can memorize a very random 16-character password, then you're good. That's all you need. And the nice thing about LastPass, that's all you have to remember it, and you let it generate very complicated passwords and remember it from now on.
Yep, works good. Works great. I have a question.
Yes.
I teach, and I record lectures for my students, and this weekend it happens that the audio didn't upload to YouTube or whatever. I don't even know what the problem is, actually, but I know students don't have audio on the lecture.
Ugh.
So, you know, they can't go over my lecture, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Now, I do use Dropbox all the time.
Good.
But what I decided what I need to do is have a way to automatically synchronize all my files at school into my Dropbox so I can get to it at home so I could troubleshoot this sort of a thing from home. It's a long ways to school.
That's what Dropbox does.
Well, right. But I keep all of my files on our servers at schools, and they're tape backed up and all that other stuff. So I need access to particular files that just by folder so I can get to it from home as well. So I wonder if...
Oh, I see. So instead of backing up that large folder, you just want one or two files in that folder.
Perhaps so. So I was wondering if you had a recommendation for some automatic syncing that'll take care of that for me. So when I make my lectures, for example, they're obviously saved to the school servers, but they're also put in Dropbox so I can get to them home.
That's an interesting question. Instead of backing up the folder, you don't control what's in the folder. So you can't say, look, I'm going to make a folder with just the stuff I want because it's all stored in the school servers and those folders are out of your control. Is that basically it?
Yeah, pretty much.
So the problem is that the most granular you can get with Dropbox is folders. You can't say, just back up that file.
Right.
So that's what we want. We want you to say, this file, and this file, back it up.
Well, perhaps I should explain. On one computer, the computer that I saved my lecture from, I don't have a way to connect directly with Dropbox. I'd have to upload them via internet.
So that's more complicated.
In my office, I do. Yes. So I save the files on the servers at school. In my office, I could actually pull them into Dropbox, but I was hoping for a way that I could just sync folders automatically somehow.
So folder level sync is okay, but you just can't get on. I'm really confused.
Okay.
You can't. There's one machine that you can't you can't use Dropbox because
we cannot have individual logins.
Got it. You're just not allowed to put Dropbox on there.
Exactly.
Which means you wouldn't be allowed to put any software on there.
That's a fact. It is controlled by the IT people.
So you can't put some other synchronization program on there because you can't put anything on there.
Well,
so you have to manually copy the files off of there, right? I mean, how else would you get them?
Well, at this point, yes. On my computer in my office, I can control what's going there, and I can actually, by default, look at the files.
That's why I don't understand what you. So you could put Dropbox on your office computer, on your home computer. The question is, how do you get the files from the server to your office computer?
My office computer sees the server automatically.
It does.
Just like the.
Got
yeah.
It. So all you really need is some program to run on your office computer to grab those individual files from the server keep them synchronized on your office. Dropbox will do the rest.
Yes.
Second copy.
Back-end copy?
Second copy. It's from Centered Systems. Second copy. It's a shareware program. And you can say, I want now, are the file names the same, or they change all the time?
Every lecture is a different file
name. So you would have to add that, you know, there's no way you can figure out what the new file name is. But second copy can copy individual folders or individual files.
And I can just set it up to do it automatic.
Yeah. So that's one way to do it. Now, somebody's saying, and this is a good point in the chat room, if your server's mounted at your office computer, you could tell Dropcopy to copy the folder that it thinks it's a local folder. So I don't know if you'd need to install Dropbox on the server.
Yeah, well, in my office, like I said, it is installed in my office.
Right.
And I do
but have, can it not see the folders on the server as if they're local? You might try that.
I just don't know.
Can I see you and can I copy you?
So
that would be one. I love Second Copy. Highly recommend it. The chat room is saying they also like SyncBack, SyncBack. Might be another one to take a look at. Both allow you to try for free. I don't recommend Microsoft's own Sync toy, which is free. It has some issues, like screwing up. So I used to recommend it, but they've had some problems with it lately. But Second Copy is great. I've used Second Copy literally for 10, 15 years, and it's just better and better. Here's an interesting thing, though, with SyncBack. Jeff is sitting across from me. He likes it. He says it will use wildcards. So if you do have lecture names that are all kind of similar, you could use the wild card to say, sync everything that looks like this. That would really be handy. Thank you, Jeff. Leo Fort, the tech guy, 8888-ASK-LEO. I kind of admire Perry. He's a professor who puts all his lectures online so kids can listen to him. Before you go, Perry, I bet the kids love that. They don't have to come to the lecture. Oh, he's strolled away from the phone. Let's see if he comes back in a second. Because I think that's hi Perry.
Yep,
so that's a cool thing. What do you teach?
Drafting and engineering, graphics, SolidWorks, AutoCAD, strength of materials.
So that's a good example of it. You don't care if the kids come to the lecture because it's really the lab that's so important.
Absolutely, lab is very important.
So if they have to attend the lab, or they're not going to get a grade because it's all hands on. So why not let them listen to the lectures offline? I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, it's especially important for them for the strength of materials class because it's tough stuff.
You there's a lot of material.
Real-world mathematics. So, lots of material.
A lot of material. It gives them a chance to listen again and again. And I think that's fantastic. You should make a podcast out of it. Seriously.
We've thought about it. Yeah, we've thought about it.
Everybody's doing that now. You know, the Open Courseware Initiative at MIT, they put all their classes online.
That's true. Yeah.
Amazing.
That's true.
And I don't think it hurts the university. I think it helps the university because your class is a perfect example. You still need to come in and do it. There's nothing like hands-on.
Yes.
Well, I applaud you, Perry.
Thank you. It's just a matter of doing it. It's, you know, we just ramped up technology, so.
So what we guessed is that the problem is that folder the university keeps has a lot of other people's lectures in there.
No, it doesn't have a lot of other lectures. It's mine, but the Dropbox is linked to my computers here at home and, you know, to the standard Dropbox folder on my office computer, but I don't want it linked up to the backed up computers.
Okay. You could, because it's mounted. Those drives are mounted, so you could.
Exactly.
Dropbox would look at them as a regular drive. But I think this, in fact, the more I look at this SyncBack, the more it looks like exactly what you want. But you can try before you buy. And you can say individual things. But since I think you probably have a standardized file naming system, you could probably use wildcards, lecture **, and just capture all of that.
Right, probably could. Actually, I saved them lecture and then just simply the date.
Yeah.
In class folders.
Yeah, perfect. Give it a try, Perry.
All right, thank you.
Great to talk to you. This is a very, a great thing to know about folks in general. We talk a lot about backup and how to do it and so forth. And I'm a big believer in something that's automatic, that does synchronization. And I'm obviously not alone. That's why Dropbox does so well. Some people have some concern about Dropbox because we learned, not through any revelation by Dropbox, but through deduction, that Dropbox has access to your data. So I would not share on Dropbox anything that was private. For instance, if you're a physician, do not put patient records on Dropbox. You'll be violating HIPAA. So it's not ideal for some kinds of data sharing, stuff you want to keep to yourself. Not a good idea. There is another service that I've used and recommend called Spider Oak that will do individual files. It's a kind of a drop other than Dropbox. And the advantage Dropbox has is been around for so long now that lots of software supports it. So if you're, your smartphone software, a lot of them will use Dropbox's data storage and so forth. Spider Oak is awesome. Not as well known, so not as well supported by third-party programs, but it does have the advantage of what they call zero-knowledge privacy. You can store data on Spider Oak that they cannot see, only you can see. And I'm told we'll also do this file by file as well as folder by folder backup. Expensive. Dropbox and Spider Oak both require subscriptions, ongoing payment, whereas something like SyncBack or Second Copy, you buy it once. You can even use the free version, but you buy it once and you don't need to pay again. Except for, I presume, updates at some point. Hey, one other note. We were talking at the beginning of the show about a laptop for school. And our caller said she uses Blackboard. And somebody pointed out, I didn't realize this, Blackboard does not yet work with Internet Explorer 10, the most recent version you'll be getting with Windows 8. So you'll have to use an older version of Internet Explorer. That's a little frustrating. Dino, Syracuse, New York. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Dino.
Hey, Leo.
What can I do for you today?
So we are both patiently waiting for AT&T to ship our HTC One.
Yeah, AT&T says it'll come. They'll ship Tuesday, and I overnighted it, so I should get it Wednesday.
Hopefully, get it a couple of days.
Did you get the white or the black?
Goes out. I got the silver.
Me too. Yeah, the pearl or whatever they call it. Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
And did you get 32 or 64 gigabytes?
I got the 32 gig. Yeah. I figured that'd be enough.
Reason I got the 64 is there's no SD card, so you gotta buy what you need.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But
I find that frustrating, but that's the way it is. Right.
Anyways, I saw the device yesterday at a store. They have the they have them out, you know, to check out, and the screen was just amazing. And I definitely want to protect that screen. You know, usually I don't really put anything on my phone, but with the paint,
I don't either. And I'll tell you why. The screens now are using Gorilla Glass. This uses the newest Gorilla Glass. It is really, really tough. And I hate having a screen protector on there. You certainly can get plastic screen protectors you put on there. They still, the touch all works and everything. It just takes some of the experience away. I'm not, you know, remember, I'm going to get a new phone in a few months anyway. So I don't, if it wears out, that's one of the perks of my job is that I have to try all the new stuff. But I don't think I'll even put a case on this. It's just too pretty. I hate putting a case on the iPhone 5. For the same reason, why design this gorgeous phone and then cover it up with a case? But OtterBox and others are going to make HTC One cases. In fact, I think they have the HTC One case now from OtterBox, and it will include a screen protector in it. You know, the OtterBox is that thing you can throw it across the room and it's protected, and then it has a plastic screen cover that goes on top of it. The thing is, that's not going to protect it against the one thing Gorilla Glass is prey to, which is breakage. We should have talked more with our material science professor and our last caller, because this is the trade-off in material sciences. If something is hard to scratch, it's physically hard, it tends to shatter. And glass is a good example. It's hard to scratch it, but if you hit it just right, it'll shatter, it'll break. Whereas you can use aluminum, as the body's made out of aluminum, and that is less prone to shattering, but is much more prone to scratching. HTC says they're using a special kind of aluminum that's not as soft as the iPhone 5. Within days, I got dings and nicks all around my iPhone 5, the bezel there.
Yeah.
Because it's soft.
Go ahead.
You go ahead. You go ahead.
since I just wanted to avoid any type of scratches, you know, just even a small scratch.
I know.
Sometimes. Yeah. And I wanted to put something on top of the screen. I wanted to see what the best material is nowadays to preserve that definition, because I know there's like the Zag InvisiShield or whatever it is.
Yeah, Zag's good. Yep.
It kind of messes up the definition. And
Those are all good. They're all the same. They're pieces of plastic shields that go on top of the screen. They keep the screen from scratching, but again, will not protect it if you drop the screen on a pointed object and it hits it just right. It'll shatter because it's glass. This is why we like glass screens as opposed to plastic. Plastic's softer and scratches easily, but it doesn't break.
Yeah.
So it's all a trade-off, you know?
Now, for glass screen protectors, they're like tempered glass on top of the glass. So if something hits the screen, it'll break that glass, but it won't break the glass behind it.
Yeah, but then you lose the touch screen capability, Dino.
You know
what you're doing, though? You're going through the process that a designer goes through when they make this stuff. This is why designing a smartphone is so tough. And in fact, the HTC One is probably a 2 or 3 year old design. Takes that long. And there's lots of trade-offs. They have to lots of thinking. You know, who was it revealed that the next two iPhones, both of which were designed under Steve Jobs, who's been gone for more than a year, because it takes so long to get this stuff out. So, and a lot of it is just, you know, what materials can we use? In many cases, they have to make special machines at the factories to make these. I'm sure the HTC One, which is a milled aluminum unibody, they say it takes 70 minutes to mill it. That's probably a purpose-built machine just to make those cases. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show today brought to you by our good friends at Ting. Ting is a MVNO. That means they are a cell phone company that repackages Sprint coverage. And if you have good Sprint coverage where you are, then you've got to check out Ting. Go to techguy.ting.com. to find out more. It's a new mobile phone service that's designed really to smooth off the rough edges of most mobile phone services these days. For instance, what do we hate most about what do you hate most? The 2-year contract, the early termination fees, you have to pay them if you want to stop. Nope, Ting has no contracts. There are no ETFs. There's no bundling or ride-along services. You pay for exactly what you use, no more, no less. No penalties or overage charges if you use more. And if you use less, they'll rebate you the difference. I love it. TechGuy.ting.com. They have a calculator. Bring your phone. Bring your current cell phone bill here to TechGuy.ting.com and do the savings calculator. You can actually see how much you'd save. Or if you want to, you know, just play with it to see how much it would cost, I'll give you an example. Here's a monthly plan for, let's say it's a family of four, okay? So four phones. Each phone is $6 a month. And then you add everything shared. You can it's all pooled, as many phones as you want on a single account with pooled numbers. So let's say we use 1,000 minutes among the four phones. If you use more, don't worry. I'll explain what happens. 2,000 text messages, but let's get 3 gigabytes of data, 4 phones, total cost $110 a month for that whole thing. Not each, for the whole family. That's a lot less than I pay for my phone alone. Now, here's the beauty part. If you use fewer minutes, they rebate you the difference. If you use more minutes, they just charge you at the next level up. They don't penalize you. There's no mysterious line items. What do you get? Everything, including tethering and hotspot, built in, free. No additional charge for hotspot. They also have picture and video messaging, 3-way calling, caller ID, voicemail, everything. Great customer support. They'll never put you on hold when you call during business hours. Their customer reps are empowered to solve your problem. They also have wonderful online help and support, including video tutorials, video startup guides, very active customer forums. You can ask questions. In fact, that's a great way to find out more about Ting. Go in there and ask customers. Hey, what do you think? Do you like your Ting? You can bring your LTE device to Ting or buy a new phone. In fact, we've got a deal. If you go to techguy.ting.com, you'll save $25 on your first Ting device. All kinds of smartphones, including my favorite, the Note 2, the Galaxy S3. No, you can't get an iPhone on Ting. I don't know. You might be able to bring your own. I have to look at that. There is a bring your own device. I don't know if the iPhone qualifies or not. You can read about it here.
You can't.
Yeah. I'm not surprised. This is a great service. You got to try it. TechGuy.ting.com. Find out more. great for businesses or families that want multiple phones. You purchase your device first at techguy.ting.com. You get the $25 back. You receive your phone in 2 to 5 business days. Activate it with Ting. You can select a new number or port your existing number. Of course, you can keep your number. You select the monthly minutes, messages, and megabytes. Ting bills you at the beginning of your payment period, but you'll not be charged or credited in the following pay period based. You will be charged or credited in the following pay period based on what you actually used. So you get billed for the amount that you selected, but you don't actually pay until you've used what you want, and that's when they charge you for exactly that and no more. It is a really, really great idea. This is how all cell phone service should be. It's not. That's why you got to use Ting. And we thank him for supporting the Tech Guy. Visit techguy.ting.com. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. And this is the show where we kind of serve your techno lust, your need to find out more about computers and the internet, cell phones and camcorders, MP3 players, digital photography, and a whole lot more. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the number to call if you have a question, a comment, a suggestion. 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S., outside the U.S. Hey, call, please. Just use Skype or something like that. It won't cost you anything. Love to talk to you about your tech problems. I am going to come back in a little bit and talk about generating good passwords. We talked in the first hour about why you should have a password vault. My recommendation is LastPass, but there are other good choices like 1Password and KeepPass. To keep all your passwords, let your password vault generate long, incomprehensible, completely unmemorable, random passwords with upper and lowercase letters, numbers, and punctuation. Sometimes, you know, it really bugs me. My banks will say, no, you can't have a password longer than 10 characters. It's like, what? You're a bank. You should let me have the most secure password I can think of. No, we will not let you do that. It's too much storage for us or something. I don't know. Not a good sign when you see that. But do let the password vault generate those passwords. The 1Password you have to remember is the password vault's password. And we'll talk about how to make good passwords for your password vault a little bit later on. But first, let's say hi to Bob in Cypress, California. Hi, Bob. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi. A couple of years ago, I heard you talk about the disadvantages of hosting your site with a GoDaddy because it would be multiple sites on the same server. And it got me looking for other solutions, and I looked at hosted solutions, and I went to top 10 reviews, and I saw a thing called BigCommerce.
Yeah.
And I went with them, and I tell you, it was the best move I ever made.
Do you work for BigCommerce?
Commerce.com.
Now, you're telling me you don't work for them or anything, right?
I do not. I have my own website, a commercial website. I sell wearing apparel, and there's lots of different variations, colors, sizes, different prices for different sizes. And BigCommerce allows you to have that flexibility with what they call options. It allows you to have lots of different options and lots of different effects, different images you can show for a different option. Different prices, like XX, XXX, are more expensive. They also have a lot of what they call third-party integrations. I integrate with my a payment gateway, so my credit card charges are made automatically. I integrate with a shipping manager called ShipWorks that generates the mails. Right now I'm using Stamps.com as the postage provider because I ship priority mail. And they have a tremendous number of third-party integrations. They have a tremendous amount of flexibility, and you could build your website in a kind of a what you see, what you get environment.
All right. That's good. They haven't paid for an ads, but you've given them a good plug. And if you do want to sell online, I think BigCommerce is very good, BIG Commerce.
I think it's the best.
Yeah, no, and I would agree with you. They do a good job. What's your name of your site?
GuyHarveyShirts.com.
And how long have you been using them?
A couple years now. I started off with a couple different URLs, and then they went from what they call variations to options, so I rebuilt my site, and I hosted under that domain name, which was my original domain name.
Yeah, they're good. Yeah, there's other choices, like Shopify is the big competitor for BigCommerce. BigCommerce has been around for a while. Disclaimer, they have been an advertiser in the past on this network. I think they buy ads on one of our stations in Los Angeles, so... I should just mention that. And I'm sure, Bob, that you have nothing to do with them. I believe it's a sincere, unsolicited endorsement. I think it's a good company. If you're looking for an e-commerce solution, it's one of the very best out there. Thank you, Bob. I appreciate it. Jared, Winnipeg, Ontario. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Bob.
Hello.
I mean, Jared. What can I do for you?
Well, I set up with my podcast, and it's up and running, and everything's great. We've got 125 episodes in the can, so that's awesome. We're all kind of wrestling fans at heart, but we're also geeks, too, and we're trying to spread out into doing product reviews, and I seem to get, you know, stymied everywhere I go. I always get told that no matter who I request stuff from, well, we don't have any review units and things like that.
Yeah, it's hard if you're a podcaster, an independent media. Believe me, as independent media, I know, a podcaster, a blogger, to get review units from companies. They want to reserve, you know, this is a, we're in a transitionary period where, you know, 5 years ago, it was computer and trade press. It was magazines. That's who got the units, the newspapers. You know, you looked at the first iPhone. Who got copies of the first iPhone before it came out? Only three people. David Pogue of the New York Times, Walt Mossberg of the Wall Street Journal, and Ed Begg of the USA Today. Why did they get them? Well, they had the right initials, USA Today, Wall Street Journal, and New York Times. So it's tough. And companies are nervous about sending out too much product. And if you're an independent blogger or independent podcaster, it's going to be tougher still. They don't know who you are. You're not affiliated with a company. They're afraid of losing it. They don't know how big your blog or podcast is. So you're going to have to, you know, give them information like, look, I have 100,000 listeners or whatever. And you're competing against other people. It's an interesting issue. We even have trouble getting stuff. I actually got to the point where I just didn't even want to deal with PR people. And so I made a policy not to ask for review units. Almost everything I talk about, my HTC One that's coming on Wednesday, my Acer S7 that I've mentioned a couple of times, these are things I bought and paid for. Now, obviously, you cannot do that if you're a product review podcast. You can't afford to. You're not making enough money to buy everything you review. I'm fortunate enough to be in that position. So it's a tough position to be in. You just have to kind of keep banging on them. There's no magic formula. We do have a product review show that we do on my podcast network, and we have some success, but Twit's been around for a while. We have millions of listeners. We're independent media. We're not associated with CNET or CBS or anybody like that, but because we've been around for a while, people know who we are, but we still have trouble. There's a lot of companies that won't give us review units, period.
Oh, wow. Okay. I figured if anybody was going to get anything, you guys would.
No, well, if anybody gets them, it's CNET, right? They're CBS Interactive. They've got, and it's not, you know, the PR companies aren't wizards at this stuff. They don't want to take chance. It's mostly PR companies, by the way, that award these review units. Sometimes it's the company itself. And it's just,
right, I've talked to Wagner Edstrom.
Wagner Edstrom is a Microsoft review. If it's software, it probably is a little bit easier because they're not risking as much, right? But if it's hardware, boy, that's going to be tough. And often they make you sign a long contract about, you know, you're going to pay them if they don't get it back within a reasonable amount of time, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But you understand that. You're asking them, in many cases, for products worth hundreds, maybe thousands of dollars. There's no magic to this. In fact, it's something one should consider if one wants to get into the product review business. It's going to be a little difficult if you're not a big, well-known entity. Walt Mossberg has no trouble getting every product he wants to look at. In fact, I know people like John C. Dvorak and Walt Mossberg, and I can tell you that they get so much stuff unsolicited, they have to rent space to store it. It's actually a nightmare. It's like having the Midas touch. You know, King Midas, he thought it'd be a great idea. He could touch anything, turn it into gold. Turned out not such a great idea. Because everything turned into gold. What are you going to eat? Well, it's kind of like that. Ooh, wouldn't it be cool if I could get any product I wanted for review? And then it starts arriving. You get 18 boxes from UPS every day. And where do I put it? What do I do with it? It's overwhelming. That's why I got off I did not want. It was more because I got too much stuff than I got too little. I got off the treadmill. I said, don't send me anything. I don't want to talk to you. I don't talk to PR people ever. Ever. I say, don't call me. Remember? Now, Jeff, somebody called. Somebody I even know personally. You put the note on my desk, Jeff, what'd I tell you? I said, send her to the website. Tell her to follow the rules there. Email me. I don't want to hear from you. Because I don't like talking to PR people. Because you know why? Because if something's bad, I want to be able to say it's bad and not feel bad. Oh, I don't want to hurt her feelings. I want to be able to say it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 88-88. Ask Leo. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. Neil and Ranch. Oh, wait a minute. Neil's new. I'm trying to get the people who've been on the longest. That would be Carlo in Mississauga, Ontario, Canada. Hello, Carlo.
Hey, Leo. How's it going?
It's great. How you doing?
Not bad.
Good.
Great to speak to you.
Thanks for calling. What can I do for you?
Well, I'm currently using RealPlayer to download videos from the internet.
No, really?
The problem I'm having is that it's slow, it's glitchy, hard to navigate.
Yeah, because it's kind of like 1995's calling. They want their software back. That's kind of old stuff.
Yeah, I know, but I'm not sure what I could use that's better.
What do you want to do?
Well, I want to download videos. I want to have the ability to convert the files. I like the ability to burn CDs and discs. Now, everyone online has their own opinion, and everyone claims that their product is the best. So, who do you believe?
Where are you getting these videos from?
Mostly from YouTube.
YouTube.
I watch a lot of tutorials.
The deal with YouTube is that it's a flash site that's not designed. There's no download this file button. You need to capture the video. RealPlayer is probably about the worst way you could do that. There are a lot of programs like TubeSocks that are designed to help you download YouTube, even though YouTube doesn't officially support this. The reason being, in order to play Flashback, you in effect have to download it. You have to, you've downloaded it to your computer and play it back, but they just don't put a download button on it. So there are a lot of programs that will do this. TubeSock is one, $20 for Windows or Macintosh. It's a standalone program. There's also websites. People in the chat room say Video Get is another good one. You know what we're going to do is we're going to make a list of these on our website, techguylabs.com, so that you can try them all. There's some that are website-based. KeepVid is an example. You'll enter in to keepvid.com, the YouTube URL, and you could press a play button or a download button. The download button will download that file to your computer, and then you can burn it or save it or do whatever you want. There are extensions for Firefox and Google Chrome. There's a lot of suggestions in the chat room. One of the reasons I like TubeSock and YouTube doesn't is these downloaders strip out the ads. So you know how when you get a YouTube video and there's a 20-second ad at the beginning and then there are pop-up ads in the middle? None of that stuff comes with the video. The video is by itself. And, of course, that's how YouTube makes money. So it's probably, I don't know if it's illegal. I think it doesn't make YouTube happy. But there are lots of reasons to do it. There are Chrome extensions, Firefox extensions, standalone apps like TubeSock, websites like KeepVid. I just saw a new iPad app, which I'm sure is going to be blocked any minute now, called MCTube, MCTUBE, that does the same thing. I don't know what the status is on this. I know YouTube doesn't want you to do it, and I think probably what happens is they figure, well, not that many people are going to take the trouble to do it, so we're not going to worry about it. Most of the billion views that Psy got on his video, Oppo Gangnam Style, were people just watching it on the site over and over again. So it's probably fine. It's probably fine. I'll tell you what, James DeRuvo, who is watching the chat room scroll by and is keeping track of all the recommendations we're getting from the chat room, and we're literally getting dozens, we'll put a list of the ones that the chat room mentions on our website. But there's three right there that do three different things. One's web-based. One is an app that you buy. Two are an app that you buy, and one is an iPad app. There are lots of ways to do this. RealPlayer would be probably the single worst way to do it. Only because that's just out of date. There are free solutions. FLV to MP3 will take the audio out of a flash video. You shall... Oh, it is in the YouTube Terms of Service. You shall not. It's like a commandment. Like Moses brought this down from the mountaintop. You shall not download any content unless you see a download or similar link displayed by YouTube on the service for that content. You shall not. But on the other hand, they don't really take... Again, maybe they can't. Because really, maybe there isn't anything they can do about it. Because really, you are downloading it in order to play it. You have to. Thou shalt not download. It's the book of YouTube. By using this service, you agree. So, it is technically a violation of the terms of service. I don't know. I don't know what they would do about it. I don't think you're going to have the YouTube police knocking at your door. That's a day I don't want to see. The day YouTube has its own police force. Max, West Los Angeles, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Yeah.
Hey, hi. Max. Hey, welcome.
Question. I'm getting this, I got this Panasonic S60 TV, and the sound is, like, not good.
Well, yeah, I mean, I have a Panasonic VT50. They're great TVs. Those Vieiras are recommended by all and sundry.
It's wonderful. And
but they never expected you to use the speakers on the TV. They fire backwards, for one thing.
Right, and my old plasma, which is in a different room, is a Pioneer from 5 or 6 years ago. It's a marvelous sound.
Yeah, they don't do that anymore. For one thing, they don't need to add to the cost of it, because anybody who wants a big HD TV is probably putting surround sound speakers in. They expect you to use your own speakers, in other words. So the speakers that they include are, you know, just so that they can say, well, it has sound.
Yeah, postage stamps. So my question is, Panasonic makes a sound bar, and for a couple hundred bucks, so I'm still reasonably under budget.
Yeah.
If I buy it.
It'd be better.
But, yeah. My question is, I would love to be able to control the whole thing from my DirecTV remote. Is that something that...
Yeah, that's the challenge. That's the challenge, because you... and it is non-trivial. So what you're looking for... Your Pioneer has optical audio out.
No, this is a Panasonic.
I'm sorry, I meant Panasonic. I have a Panasonic as well. That mistake my piece.
Yeah, I got the cable and I got the bar. And
so the optical out is controllable by the television remote. So, for instance, I hooked up to a similar TV. I hooked up the Sonos Play Bar, which is the same thing. It's a sound bar, a little more expensive, about $600 or $700, but it has optical in. And then you go through the Sonos setup, and what it does is it says, well, let me see what kind of remote you have. Okay, blah, blah, blah. Okay, good, I got it. We'll now control the sound with the remote on your TV. So can that soundbar, and any good one is going to, because this is how you have to do it, can that soundbar take optical in, and can it be controlled by your TV's remote? And in most cases, the answer is yes. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And taking your calls at 8888-ASK-LEO. Stan in Rialto, California. Hi, Stan.
Hey, Leo, how you doing?
I'm good. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Hey, I want to make a comment on your something you used to advertise called ViewZone cameras.
Yeah.
I think those are the best cameras that you can get out there. I mean, I just got one about a week ago.
What do you use it for?
And I use it for, like, monitoring my entries in my home.
Mm-hmm.
And, the setup is so easy. I mean, when you first start advertising it, I said, no, because I hear other people call in and say, well, I had to search for IP addresses for my cameras and all this stuff. And when I got this system, it did exactly what it said it did. You just plug it in, turn it on, and you register, and you're watching your cameras.
Kind of amazing, isn't it? Yeah.
It's amazing, yes.
So the key on the ViewZone, and it's not for everyone, the key on the ViewZone is it's wireless, totally. So it's a Wi-Fi camera, but it also doesn't need power. It's battery powered. So it does mean that's very easy to install because you don't have, you can just glue it to the wall. And they have a variety of housings, and outdoor and indoor and all that stuff. So that makes it simple. However, it also is a disadvantage because the view zone will not stream continuously. You cannot record what's going on and go back and look at it. It would kill the battery. So the way the view zone works is it comes on when you go and access it. You can access it from an app or from a website. And when you access it, it turns itself on. And then after you finish accessing it, it turns itself off. Otherwise, the battery wouldn't last. It lasts about 6 months in normal use. But it's not on all the time. So it just depends on what you need. There are people who prefer a camera that's recording all the time. We have, for instance, a company called Dropcam makes cameras that we have all over our studio. Those are on all the time. So people can go to twit.tv/dropcams, plural, yeah, twit.tv/dropcams, and see our 6 drop cams. And there's always people looking at those. If those were battery powered, we'd have to change the battery every day. But they're not. They're plugged in. Makes it harder to install them, because you have to have a plug nearby. Maybe more of a problem if it's outdoors even. But that works nicely for that usage. Dropcam also records if you pay a subscription fee. And so if you said, hey, somebody broke in 3 o'clock last night, let me rewind the tape, it's more like a traditional security cam. The view zones won't do that. They'll only – now, you can set them up. I'm pretty sure you can set them up to take a picture if there's activity, things like that. You just have to understand your needs. But if, for instance, you want a camera out front and somebody's ringing the doorbell, you want to know who it is, perfect. You open up the ViewZone app on your smartphone, you see who's out there, and you can answer the door or hide, depending on who it is. So thank you. Appreciate the recommendation, Stan. V-U-E-Z-O-N-E .com, and they're made by Netgear. And as he mentioned, they are used to be an advertiser on one of our local stations, not anymore. So I can tell you the truth now. They're great. Derek in San Diego, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Derek.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
Pretty good. It's a pleasure to talk with you.
Thank you. What can I do for you?
Well, I've recently bought a Samsung Galaxy S3.
Mm-hmm. Best-selling phone out there right now, I think.
Oh, yeah. I love it.
Yeah.
I mean, among the many reasons I haven't really gone with the iPhone, I think would be the Google. I mean, I use Gmail, the contacts, calendar, and even the maps and navigation. I've had the S3 now for a few weeks, and I'm finding, of course, some glitches with the maps and navigation. And I really can't find any solution online. Not sure where to go.
What's wrong? What's going on?
It's not really. It's the maps app doesn't really give me a precise location.
Doesn't know where you are. Okay. So yeah, first thing you got to do is make sure you go into your settings and turn on in the location settings all the appropriate location devices. So there's, I think it's 3 different ways it can locate you. You want to make sure, of course, GPS is turned on. That's the primary way. But it also uses Wi-Fi triangulation. Make sure that's turned on. Turn everything on in location. By default, I don't think GPS is turned on by default. Usually it warns you. It says, hey, you're not going to be very accurate. But you want Wi-Fi and GPS. The Wi-Fi is useful indoors. GPS does not work indoors. So if you're saying, well, I'm in a parking garage 3 feet, three stories underground, and it can't see where I am, well, you're right, because the phone can't see the satellites. In fact, the Wi-Fi might not even help you if there's no Wi-Fi access spots within view. So there's some places you can't get a location. But if you're walking down a city street, you should have no trouble knowing where you are to within, maybe 10 feet. GPS is intentionally fuzzed for non-military use. And Wi-Fi is not perfect. The way Wi-Fi works is kind of interesting. Your Wi-Fi has to be turned on. It will see all the access spots within an area. That's why it works well in an urban area where there are lots of access points. And then triangulate based on strength. So it could say, well, that access point is probably about 50 feet away. That one's 10 feet away. This one's 5 feet away. if I do some calculations, you are here, and that can be very accurate. So turn on all the location checkboxes in location. And then if it's still not working, give it some time. Let it sit out for a bit. Because one of the things that happens with any new GPS device, or if you move to a new area, like hundreds of miles away, it has to build up an almanac of GPS satellites that are local to your area. All GPS devices do that. So the first time you get a lock will be the longest, will take the longest amount of time, could take minutes, because it's building up the almanac of visible satellites. Once it's got that information, it's usually much quicker to triangulate and figure out where you are. You know that GPS uses and proves Einstein's theory of relativity? If it weren't for Einstein's theory of relativity being true, being an accurate way to measure how the universe works, GPS would not work. It's kind of an amazing thing. We're carrying miracles in our pockets. And sometimes we even forget, or we're like Derek. We go, you know, it takes a couple of minutes to figure out where I am. It's relativity, my friend. My mom, who just got for her first Android phone, first smartphone of any kind, I told her, you don't have to worry about getting lost anymore as you take your walks, because she's new and she's visiting. She's visiting a new town. She says, I want to take a walk, but I don't get lost. I said, don't worry. You whip out your phone. You say, here's where I want to be. Tell me how to get there. Give me walking directions. And it does. And it blows her away. Our show today brought to you by Hulu Plus. Streaming unlimited current hit TV shows, classic series, acclaimed movies. It's a fast and easy way to get your favorite shows on almost anything. Almost anything. Hulu Plus works on smart TVs. I've got it on my smart TV. It works on, wow, that looks like a show. It works on my Xbox 360, on your PS3, your Blu-ray player, Apple TV, Roku's got it. You know, Sunday I always fire up Hulu Plus and watch the skits from Saturday Night Live. I like to see the monologue. Maybe I'll watch a couple of the skits. It's always fun to do that. That way I don't have to stay up late and I don't have to watch the whole show. I just watch the best parts. There's plenty of shows, though, I like the whole thing. Community, Parks and Rec. I always watch The Daily Show. Hulu Plus is great for that. Now, we've got a special trial. If you haven't tried Hulu Plus, you can try it right now for 2 weeks. That's double the normal length, free. Visit HuluPlus.com/twit. Now, the normal URL is Hulu, H-U-L-U. But if you go to HuluPlus.com/twit, you'll get 2 weeks free. Or you can go to twit.tv, scroll down to the bottom, and click the Hulu Plus banner. 2 weeks free just for you. Some great stuff. Did you see the Criterion Collection is now on Hulu Plus? So there's some really wonderful movies as well on here. I am loving Hulu Plus. Some of these are the greatest movies of all time. Beautiful editions, classics. Firefly 2, HuluPlus.com/twit, or click twit.tv, go to the bottom of the page and click the banner. Yeah, 400 Blows, what a great movie that was. Truffaut. The Criterion was like, these are the greatest movies of all time, and there should be perfect versions of these available. You know, they're like saving these movies. It's so cool. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I mentioned this, maybe you thought I was nuts. So I'm going to explain what I'm talking about. And this comes from an Ohio State, a lecture at Ohio State University in the astronomy department. Why Einstein's theory of special relativity and the theory of general relativity are absolutely critical. The calculations predicted by Einstein's theory of relativity are absolutely critical, without which GPS would not work. There's two things going on. The GPS satellites are moving around relative to us on the ground. So that due to Einstein's prediction of time dilation, this is the special relativity, there is a variation between the clocks in the sky and the clocks on the ground of about 7 microseconds. That's important because GPS relies on very careful clock calculations. The reason that they can do the triangulation between 3 or more satellites and your position on Earth and figure out where you are on Earth is by seeing how long it takes to get the signal. You have to do that within nanoseconds, about 30 nanoseconds. So that's why it's important when there's microseconds of difference, you know, 7 microseconds, that's a big difference compared to nanoseconds. Microseconds is millionths of a second. Nanoseconds is billionths of a second. Furthermore, and this is the one that blows my mind, because the satellites are farther from the Earth, they're less affected by the Earth's mass. So they appear to be ticking faster than the clocks on the ground. Clocks on the ground are slowed because of the curvature of space-time due to the Earth's mass relative to the clocks in the sky. And it's not an insignificant amount. It's about 45 microseconds. So satellite, these clocks on these GPS satellites tick faster than an exact identical, perfectly identical clock on the Earth, about 38 microseconds a day. That's 38,000 nanoseconds. Remember, I said that we need to measure differences of 20 to 30 nanoseconds to make GPS work. So when they designed the GPS system, they used Einstein's mathematics to calculate the difference in time between the clocks in the sky and the clocks down here to compensate for it so that this would even work. And if they hadn't done that, GPS would drift about 10 kilometers a day. It would become less and less accurate by 10 kilometers a day. And this is in your pocket, this thing. Amazing. Amazing. Neil in Rancho Cucamonga, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Neil.
Hey, Leo, how you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Very good. Leo, I'm stuck in a kind of a quandary here. We have using a company called Right Networks to do our application server, a cloud application server, and it has our QuickBooks program up there. Now, you know, it allows us to map network drives in that server, but if we plug in like a USB port or a USB drive, I cannot get that connected to the application server. So like if I want to scan some inventory items to be, you know, just from my local computer, get directly transferred to the cloud server, it won't allow me to.
You know, I wish I could help you here, Neil. I have no idea. That's specific to whatever software they're using and whatever services they provide, and I'm just not familiar with it. So,
well, I'm just more a question about it. Is there a way they can actually make a virtual port that I'll basically able to gather that data?
I'm sure there is, but I have no idea. This is well beyond me. I would call the company and have the conversation with them. I have no idea. It could be at so many different. It's not even worth me speculating. Susan in Friday Harbor, Washington. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Susan.
Hello there. Thank you for taking my call.
My
long
pleasure.
Time fan.
Thanks.
My Word documents on my desktop have become corrupted. They're fine in my documents, but those that are on my desktop have become corrupted.
How did you get them to the desktop? You saved to the desktop.
Yes, I saved to the desktop.
Interesting.
Yes.
So it should be exactly the same file that you saved to the desktop, and you did it at the same time. You saved it into My Documents and saved it to the desktop at roughly the same time.
No, I think these particular documents I simply saved to my desktop.
And you don't have a copy in My Documents.
That's correct.
So you're saying other documents work fine.
Yes.
Oh, my.
Oh, thanks.
Oh, my. What is that? So when you try to open it, Word says, this is corrupt. I can't read it.
It says Y-O-Y-A-O-O-J-F-F-I-I-O, the break page, colon break.
You're looking at it and it's garbage.
Yes. Yes.
My goodness gracious.
Oh.
My goodness gracious. No idea why it would do that. It's not right. You're using what version of Word? What version of Office?
2000.
Okay. Somebody asked, does she have Office 2000? Big Ginge, you nailed it. Is there a problem that's known with Office 2000 that causes this problem? Sounds like he said, oh, yeah, oh, I know all about that. It's a fairly old version of Office.
Yeah.
But, you know, the current version is 2013. But I'm not sure, and I'm going to have to, I'm watching the chat room to see why he said, is it Office 2000? Maybe he knows something. Maybe there's some known problem with Office 2000, but you're not opening.
This seemed to happen. This happened about 48 hours ago. I was doing some research on our local government site, looking at parcels, and I was having trouble downloading. So I was. It was suggested to me that I download.
Oh.
Adobe, directly from Adobe, and try to open these.
So these aren't documents you created. They're documents you downloaded.
These are documents I created. These are documents I created.
Okay. So tell me what happened. You were on this website and you were downloading something?
I was both downloading and creating documents from the information I was reading.
So you were reading something in Word?
I was reading something.
So let me ask you this. Did you create these documents with the same program? Were these all created with Word? What were you creating the documents with?
Word.
You save them in Word and you're trying to open them still in the same program, right? You're not accidentally opening them in some other program.
Correct.
You open. Try this. Try opening Word and going to the file menu and go to the recent files and see if those files are there.
In my recent documents, yes, yeah. I've done that, and they are fine.
Hmm. They're there, but you can't. But when you open them, they're garbage.
Yes.
So it's not just from double clicking them; it's from opening them within Word. You still have the problem.
Yes.
Hmm. And you only have one copy of Word installed. I'm worried that maybe there's different versions of this file. I'm afraid I am out of time, and I have to turn over all the cards, and we'll give you the $10 because I got no idea. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. And it's time to talk about tech. That's what we do each and every week right here. Hour number three of the Tech Guy Show. Time to talk computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders, MP3 players, digital photography, anything that's on your mind. If you've got a question, a problem, I'll try to help you. Now, we were talking in during the break in the chat room about our last caller's problems. It was kind of hard to tell what was wrong. And this is, I got to apologize, but this is not unusual on the show because I can't reach out and see your computer and investigate stuff. So it's not easy to tell exactly what's going on. And I wasn't able to tease it out from her in the time that we had exactly what had happened. I'm not sure why she mentioned she was getting data from a website. It sounds like, perhaps guess incorrectly, but I'm going to guess that she went to a website, was copying data from that website, pasting it into a Word document and saving it. If that's the case, it doesn't matter where she got the data. She's pasting it and saving it. She didn't mention that the website said she needed a PDF reader, Adobe Acrobat or something like that. Okay, that's an interesting issue, too. Now, maybe these are PDFs she's copying and pasting. If that's the case, if you open a PDF in your browser and you're trying to copy it and paste it into a word processing document, I'm not sure that would work. It's possible in some cases that wouldn't work, that you wouldn't get actual text you could paste in there, particularly if the PDF was protected. But you would notice that, I would think, when you're creating the word processing document. So if you're looking at the word processing document and it looks normal, and then you save it and then try to reopen it in the same word processor and it's garbled, I'm not sure what's going on. It could be a hard drive having problems. It could be a lot of things. I'm not sure. It's hard to tell what's happening here. There are problems with older versions of Word. You have a very old one, Office 2000, trying to open the newer file formats that Word has been using since 2008, the new DocX format. So if you got a DocX, maybe there's an issue there. One thing you might want to do is find out what that file is that's corrupt that you can't read on the desktop, and in particular what the extension for that file is. Now, unfortunately, by default, Windows doesn't show you those file extensions. That's too bad, really. I wish it did, because that can make a big difference right there. I'm afraid that for instance, if it's a DocX file, well, you're not going to be able to see that. Afraid it might be that. It might be that you saved a PDF and you can't reopen the PDF. It's just very hard to say exactly what's going on here without actually, you know, kind of coming over to your place. And I can't do that. So I'm sorry I'm not much help. I don't want you to think I gave you short shrift. I'm considering your issue. I just don't know exactly what the answer is. We've been talking throughout the day about passwords. I think this is a good, maybe every week I should, well, no, maybe not, give you an assignment, something to do. One thing I think it'd be worth doing this week is maybe rationalizing your password system. We all have so many passwords these days. There's passwords to log on to your computer, passwords to save your data to the cloud, to Dropbox or iCloud. There's passwords to purchase applications in your App Store, Windows or Microsoft or Google. There's passwords, of course, for many websites. There's passwords for some software. And we've got to keep track of all these passwords. We've got to make them unguessable. And we've got to have unique, this is hard, unique passwords for every site. It's tough. And the challenge is, of course, to be able to make this relatively convenient and easy to do without making these passwords too guessable. And the reason it came up for me is got yet another email. It's now the fourth I've received in the last couple of months from a company saying, we lost your vital information. Please change your password. In this case, it was Walmart's Vudu video service. And it wasn't a computer break-in. It was somebody actually stole the hard drives from their office that it contained passwords and accounts. And so Vudu says everybody should change their password. And that's fine. You may do that. But what if you use the same password on your Vudu site that you used on other sites? Well, now the bad guys have a chance to try those as well. And that's why you shouldn't use the same password more than once. You should make these passwords long, random, unguessable. But that makes it hard to remember. That's why I'm recommending a password vault. I use LastPass, and I recommend it highly. But there are other good choices. 1Password, KeePass is an open source solution. There are other choices. The thing to remember is that just like a vault in your house, it's a signal to thieves. This is where all the good stuff is hidden. So you make sure that vault's secure. Make sure it's locked in. Because you're saying, hey, it's all in here. If you could get in here, you'd be golden. All my jewelry's in that one box. So you better have a darn good safe. And most importantly, better have a very good password to lock that safe. And here's the problem. This is the one password you have to remember because it's the one password you can't store in the safe. Or even if you did store it in the safe, it'd be no good because you couldn't get into the safe without the password. So we now need to come up with a good, strong password for our LastPass vault. And this is the challenge because it's a password you may be entering frequently. If it's not easy to remember, easy to recover, easy to enter, you'll be tempted to leave the password vault unlocked all the time. Well, that's no good. It's like taking, I'm going to put all my jewelry in this safe and just leave the door open. That's the worst possible solution. You've centralized all your valuable stuff in one place and then left it unlocked. So you want to make sure LastPass is set up so that it doesn't remember your password, that you need to enter it from time to time. So what do we do? How do we come up with a good password? Well, I'll tell you a solution that I like. Remember, the longer the password, for every character you add, it adds exponentially to the difficulty in cracking. And in order to understand what you need to do, you have to understand that these guys are really good. The password crackers are very good. These brute force passwords, they have databases of commonly used passwords. They may be smart enough to try your birth date, your anniversary, stuff that's widely available information about you. So it's probably not good to use that or your street address or your phone number or your zip code. All that stuff they may already have. So here's what I do, and I like this, is I make a mnemonic device. I'll give you an example, not one I would suggest you use, but an example. You could take the first, say, 10 words of the Gettysburg Address. And use the first letter of each as part of your password. 47 years ago, our fathers brought forth upon this continent a new nation. There you go. Take the first letter of each. In fact, when it says 40, maybe you write 420. It's good to have some numbers in there. If there's a comma or an exclamation mark, put that in there too. Now you've got a pretty mixed up thing. Uppercase, you know, I uppercase nouns. That's a good one. Something you can remember, right? Some way that you remember. Another one that I remember people told me about was to use the last 10 presidents, uppercase if they're Democrats, lowercase if they're Republicans, or vice versa, and then intersperse it with the number of years that they served in their term. That's something you could, you might not come trippingly off the fingers, but you could recreate that password. I use song lyrics or phrases that you've memorized. To be or not to be, that is the question, whether 'tis nobler in the mind to suffer the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune, that kind of thing. Take the first letters of those. But don't stop there. We're going to have a nice 10-character password that's not really random, but looks random. Now we want to pad it. We want to add some more stuff that'll make it harder to crack. Because again, remember, the longer the better, much better. This might be where you'd add on your childhood phone number. I remember very well the number that was drilled into me when I was a 5-year-old, so you don't get lost, right? That's a good one. That's going to be hard for a bad guy to find. Or maybe your childhood zip code or something like that. So craft, if you can, a long password that you can build again, knowing the trick. That's going to work well. Make that your LastPass vault key and then have LastPass generate everything else. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Back to the phones we go. Dick in Silverado, California is next. Hi, Dick. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Oh, happier than a clam at high tide. you mentioned, I think either today or yesterday, you mentioned a gadget. It's like a speaker driver. You screw it into a wall or a piece of furniture.
Yeah, Dick DiBartolo, our gadget guy, the Gizwiz, mentioned that yesterday.
Well, you know, those things were available, I don't know, 30, 40-plus years ago.
Really? What were they called?
I can't remember the commercial name.
It's a simple idea. It's just the speaker driver by itself, and then you attach it to something that becomes, like a speaker cone, in effect.
Well, I think if I don't know if I should mention it, the company that sold them, I think they were available through Radio Shack or stores like that.
Yeah, he was talking about something called the Epishock, but there are tons of these.
Yeah.
I don't really like them.
I love them, but what's interesting is that a bunch of us engineers who live in the microwave world figured out a way to incorporate those into a piece of waveguide with a couple of other components.
Oh, my.
And it would spoof the police speed meter radars.
Oh, my. What, because they'd see the vibrating glass or what?
It's a little long to explain, but basically you take a piece of the waveguide, cut it out, and solder in some foil, and you attach the driver to the foil. And as the signal came through your waveguide and some other components, none of which required power, by the way.
Oh, interesting.
It would get modulated and go back to the radar. The radar couldn't make heads or tails.
Bounce back funny.
I love it.
Because those speed guns are actually radar. They're bouncing a high-frequency pulse at you, right?
Yes, and we also came up with a way to spoof the laser speed meters.
Mm.
But that's another show.
You sound like a troublemaker, Dick.
God, and loving every second.
I love it.
Now, there's another thing you mentioned, and I'm sorry I did not take notes, and I knew there was going to be a quiz next period. You mentioned a bit of software you can use on Windows 8 to give the GUI a Windows 7 presentation.
Yeah, to turn it into a normal operating system.
Yeah.
You know, I will tell you, the company's StarDock, and it's called Object Desktop, but StarDock.com. There are actually a number of ways to do this. This is kind of the comprehensive way to turn Windows 8 into something that's a little bit more like Windows 7. But one of the things Object Desktop does also that I really like, it's a bunch of different programs, but it has something called Modern Mix that takes the full screen Metro apps and turns them into windowed apps. So, believe me, not only do you get your start button back, but you get windowed apps instead of this full screen junk. So you could buy the individual features, or you could download the whole thing as Object Desktop. It's from StarDock. But there are others. There's the classic shell, which if you just want to put the start menu back is another solution. That's free. There are a number of solutions to do this. It's interesting that Microsoft elected not to offer this. And the third parties jumped in saying, well, we want it. And I think Microsoft's point of view is they're trying to move us into the future, and we're going kicking and screaming.
Well, didn't Microsoft dismiss the guy who gave
they did.
Up the idea of not putting that in?
Yeah, Steven Sinofsky is no longer. We don't know if he was dismissed or left voluntarily. It's unclear.
Uh-huh.
We do know that PC sales have plummeted, but again, we don't know why. It could be more people are buying tablets, that it's a post-PC era. I do guess that there's a lot of people who don't like Windows 8. I'm struggling with it myself.
I am among them. I'm not going to buy a machine with Windows 8.
Yeah. Yeah. And
that's
so,
not going to happen.
Yeah, and so it's... But Microsoft is committed to it. There's no question about it. They're full speed ahead. So,
well, there are many people who say Microsoft should be committed.
They're committed, all right. Yeah. Hey, you sound like a hacker from the old school, Dick. It's nice to meet you.
Well, let's put it this way: there was no such thing as touch tone dialing when I started hacking.
Wow.
In fact, there were no computers to hack. And anyway, yeah.
People dialed phones. I have a dialed phone in my house that uses a SIM card, and the I don't know. Somebody's written it. I got it online, and somebody's obviously written the hardware, or created the hardware that will take those and turn them into DTMF so that the phone system works with it.
Well, by the way, as we say in our world, da-da-di-di-di-di-di-da-da.
Another ham.
You bet.
Oh, of course. They're the original hackers or hams, absolutely. The original geeks. Well, it's very nice to meet you. 7-3, Dick.
7-3.
Take care. That's great. There's a certain fraternity of these ham guys. It's just great. I just really enjoy it. Just really enjoy it. They invented so much of the technology that we use today, including, by the way, the packet radio technology that makes it possible for us to surf the internet. Richard in Poway, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. Thank you so much for taking my call. I am desperate. I think my computer's haunted. But before I go, I got to thank you for one recommendation you made.
Yes, sir.
Oh, my goodness. I bought a new Epson printer.
Oh, yeah. Which one did you get?
I got the Artesian.
I love the Artesian. In fact, I'm going to buy one for my mom.
Oh, my gosh. The quality of the pictures I print, everybody goes crazy. But it is the most handy, easy-to-use computer. I mean, I'm talking about the faxing, copying, sided copies. I've never had a luxury like that in my life.
It's an all-in-one for home, and it's a network printer, which is great. So you can print from your iPad or your laptop, your portable devices. You don't have to plug it into anything but your network.
Exactly.
I just love it.
Yeah. I want to thank you so much for that recommendation.
Good. I'm glad you like it.
I love it. Not like it. All right. I just had a sidebar because it's the best printer I've ever had, and I've had every brand you can name.
Wow, that's a high recommendation. Wow.
I love it. I can't tell you.
Well, that's great. Ready? Thank you.
You're welcome. No, thank you, but you're welcome. All right, my computer, I'm sure it's haunted. About 3 months ago, I one morning when it does its thing at night and resets or reboots or whatever you call you could tell I'm a computer idiot.
Yeah.
I rely on you for everything.
Yeah.
Anyway, I come in the morning and my computer is at the original settings when it was brand new.
Oh, but no.
Everything's gone. You know, it has the original, whatever you call that, picture.
Now, are you sure you're logging into the right account?
I'm not logging into anything. It's on. I leave it on all the time.
So what it probably did, but here's my guess. Can't tell for sure. What it probably did is it rebooted. Maybe the power went out or whatever. And when it logged back in, it logged into not your account, but another default account, which has all the default settings. So what you want to do is hit Control-Alt-Delete and log out. And then you'll see, when you do the log out, you'll see all the different accounts. Choose the one that you use. That should be all right. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number, 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. Last half hour of the show for this weekend. Let me see if I can get some more calls in here. Yvette in Compton, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Yvette.
Hi, Leo.
What's up?
Hi. I have a BlackBerry torch.
Okay.
I'm sorry, you come well just as time as the guy comes. Okay, I have a BlackBerry
I'm
torch.
I'm sorry.
Upgrade to the newest version of BlackBerry?
Yeah, I like the new BlackBerry, the Z10. Now, the torch is a full screen, like the iPhone, like the Z10. You don't miss the BlackBerry keyboard at all?
Well, mine has a keyboard.
Oh, that you have a torch that has a keyboard. All right. You might want to wait for the Q10, because that has the physical keyboard. And I do have to say...
Yeah, because I like the physical keyboard.
If you want a physical keyboard, I'd wait for the Q10. I don't know when that's going to be available. The only one out right now is the Z10. I have used it, and I do think it's a really nice upgrade for the BlackBerry, the new BlackBerry 10. Very nice. Uh-huh. And, of course, you're already in the BlackBerry universe. I don't recommend people switch to BlackBerry, but if you're in the BlackBerry universe, this is a great way to keep your BlackBerry alive, I believe.
Okay. Because I was thinking about switching to the Samsung Galaxy 3. But
well, that's an awfully nice phone, and I think it's kind of... the future, it's unknown how BlackBerry is going to do going forward. So, but if you use BBM, the BlackBerry Messenger, or if you use a BlackBerry server, if you like BlackBerry because you like the security, how the phone works, and all of that stuff, I think the BlackBerry Q10 is going to. Now, it's not a slider like your torch. I just
Wanted to know, is it a good phone to get, because I've heard a lot of people complain already. So,
well, I think people who don't use BlackBerries aren't going to like it, because it's not as good as an iPhone or an Android phone in terms of the variety of apps and things like that.
They were comparing it to an iPhone.
You're going to compare it to a torch, and it's and I think if you like BlackBerry, stay with it.
Okay, so you said wait for the next version then.
Yeah, you're going to want the Q10, not the Z10.
Okay. All right, thank you so much, Leo.
You're welcome. Nice to talk to you, Yvette. I think the Q10 will be out soon. Sprint's going to have it. I don't know. I suspect many people will have it, and they're taking pre-orders now in Canada, I believe. So I think it's soon for the Q10. You know, and the question is BlackBerry 10 a good operating system? Yes. Is it fast? Is it robust? Yes. Is it easy to use? Yes. I like how it's designed. I think it's very nicely done. If you are using an iPhone or Android phone, you're probably not going to switch to it, because you're used to the much more elaborate, evolved ecosystem of applications available on those platforms. But if you're used to BlackBerry and you want to stay in the BlackBerry world, this is one way that BlackBerry is going to sort of keep up. I don't know what the future holds for BlackBerry. Yeah, they're struggling a little bit. If you wanted to move into the future, you might want to look at an Android or an iPhone. But, this is it's a credible phone. There's nothing wrong with it. It's fast. They've done a good job. Bedros, Chinos Hills, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. I'm a longtime listener, and, you have a great show. Thanks for
listening. I appreciate it.
Well, so I got a tiny problem, and I hope you can help me with this, because
couple of years ago, we started a small chain of fitness boot camps. And, you know, we obviously want to play music in there and motivate our clients during the workouts. And now we've kind of grown over the last 2.5 years to almost 200 locations worldwide.
Wow, and congratulations.
Yeah, thank you, It's been really great. But the challenge that we're having, and I don't know if I'm breaking a law or what, but we really want to send our location owners, because we're a franchise now, and so we have franchisees, and we want to send them, I guess you can kind of look at it as a mixtape each month.
Yeah, you can't do that. You can't just bring in your iPod and play music in a business.
Gotcha.
Eventually, the ASCAP BMI police will come and say, you got to license this music. That's why people buy Muzak. I hate to tell you, but that's why people pay for Muzak in their business.
And what is that? Is that like an online streaming?
Well, yeah, and I'm not going to recommend Muzak because there's something better now. It's called Pandora. You probably know about Pandora.
Yeah.
You could put together. Now, the thing about Pandora, you can't put together a playlist. You can choose a style of music, an artist, and it will put together a radio station based on that artist. There are other companies that do this. But Pandora does Pandora for Business, where they take care of the licenses, right? You can't just play regular Pandora either. I know my Pilates studio, they just put Pandora on. And you know what? Until somebody catches them, it's fine. But literally, there are people who walk around store to store, listen to the music, say, hey, I'm from ASCAP. You haven't paid your license fees. So you need to find a business solution that's licensed. DMX does Pandora for Business for $25 a month for the subscription. Now, that may be per store. I don't know. You'll have to look into it. XM Satellite has it for Business, too. What I would look into is to see if there's some, because you sounds like you have particular tracks you want to play.
Yeah, exactly, because we don't want to go from a fast song to a slow song and break the pace. And so now I'm almost wondering if we almost want to send them a list of songs to download from iTunes and an iTunes card, perhaps.
Still not legal. Those songs are licensed for personal use only. You're using them for commercial use.
We're using them in a business. Yep. I got it.
So you have to go and license it for business use in a playing through speakers in your club. There's got to be companies doing this for businesses and for gyms and so forth, because, you know, every gym has music playing. I know, especially for so you're doing boot camp, huh? You want, get working out.
Not necessarily. I mean, our clientele are women, you know, like 30 to 55 years old for the most part. And so, you know, just great, you know, fast-paced 80s, 90s, some early 2000s music. That they like.
I think Pandora might be a good choice for you, especially if you cultivate the playlist. Go to Google Pandora for Business. It's the least expensive, I think, and a good solution. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888. Ask Leo. Oh, last few minutes of the Tech Guy Show. We're going to see how many calls we can get through here, starting with Gene in Riverside, California. Hi, Gene.
Hi, Leo.
How are you?
Bewildered.
Bewitched, bothered, and bewildered.
Well, at least one of those.
What can I do to help?
Leo, I have an old Dell bought in 2007.
Okay.
Given me some problems, and just wondering maybe I should give it away and buy a new one.
Well, you know, we've often speculated on this show about how, you know, dog years are 7 to 1, right? For every human year, dog age is about 7 years. So what is the calculation for computers? And I've estimated it to be 15 years. So a 6-year-old computer like yours is 90 years old.
Okay.
Time to retire it.
Well, I'm willing to do so.
And the reason I say that is you can try to fix it, but you may end up spending more money trying to fix it than you would in getting a new computer. And a new computer will have a lot of advantages: a modern operating system, faster, larger hard drives. It'll be more powerful. Now, you can recover that old computer. You might need to put a new hard drive in it. You might want to put Linux on it instead of Windows and so forth. What's going on with it? What's wrong with it?
Oh, back in February, I'm an AOL user, and I liked their format, even though I now am bundled through my cable company.
Yeah.
Just, you know, it's all my traditional stuff on it that it was very simple for me to use.
Well, a new computer is not going to solve that. AOL.
Well, when I took it to the computer store, because I kept getting a, if it'd be on for maybe more than an hour, I was absent from it. And I would keep getting, you have been inactive for a while, refresh.
Yeah, that's AOL.
Yeah, oh, okay.
Yeah.
So the computer man said perhaps I had a virus.
No, and, no. Never go to that computer man again.
Okay.
All right. That's a problem. There's computer men and there's computer men, but that computer man is wrong.
Well, maybe even doubly is he took my AOL icon off the desktop and said perhaps I should be using Internet Explorer.
I don't like this man. I don't like him. He doesn't. He's not being nice to you.
Well, hence my call to you.
The problem really, though, you're using the AOL software, right?
Yeah.
So,
I guess.
Yeah, AOL doesn't even want you as a customer anymore. You know that, right?
I mean,
yeah, they really don't want you. They actually, although I believe, and I may be wrong, that AOL still makes the lion's share of their profits from you.
Oh, well, I'm happy for them.
The AOL software users. Are you on dial-up?
See, you're getting
Do you have a cable modem or a...
I do.
You do. Okay, so you're no longer on dial-up.
Okay.
So that's good. But I understand. Look, the AOL software works for you. It does what you want it to do. The problem is it's AOL's business model has changed. They don't see themselves as doing this much anymore. And I understand why the computer guy, he should not have erased your icon and said use IE. That was mean. The software, AOL software is timing you out. That's normal. It's not a virus. It's saying, you know, you haven't been using it. So to save resources, we're going to log you out. That's normal.
Okay.
That's what AOL does. I don't, you know, I think your AOL software would work on a modern computer, but maybe you don't need one. Are there other problems you're having?
No, not really.
Then you're fine. The truth is, you don't need an older computer to run a newer computer to run the older software you prefer.
Okay.
So as long as you don't start using new software, you don't need a new computer.
Okay. Well, let's say I want to buy one.
Okay.
Anyway, what would you recommend?
Well, you know what, you might like an iPad instead of a computer. What do you do? Email and surf the net, right? And look around.
Yeah, but I do like the desktop.
Okay.
I do like I'm retired now, and I kind of like the old-fashioned desktop.
Yeah, well, I don't blame you.
To my printer, and
yeah,
I'm just comfortable with it.
Well, I think, you know, see, the problem is the world is moving on, and, you know, I would suggest get another Windows machine, but now we got Windows 8, it looks very different.
Yeah, I saw it at the store.
You may be uncomfortable with it.
Yeah.
Not necessarily say you need to get a Mac. I'm not sure where to send you at this point.
Do you recommend a particular company?
I like Dell. Okay. I like HP for you. It'd probably be fine. I would go down to your big box store, you know, your Costco or your Walmart or whatever, and look at the computers there, even the house brands. You don't need to spend a whole lot of money. We're talking probably no more than $500.
Okay.
Play with it for a little bit and see if you can live with Windows 8. Okay. And I think you'd be fine with it, to be honest. I don't think you need much more than that.
What about memory and
Oh, just get, they'll come with 4 gigs of memory, which is plenty. And they'll probably come with a terabyte hard drive or more, maybe two. Get an i3 or i5 processor. You don't need more than that. Okay. If they have a Windows 7 computer, get it.
Okay.
They may have one lying around still. And you'd be really happier with Windows 7. It'd be very much like what you're already using. And you put your AOL software on there, and you're going to be in a world that's very familiar. kind of it's kind of the end of the line for Windows 7, but get in there while you still can, because it's a good operating system. It's very reliable, very robust, very secure. You won't have to have any learning curve. You know how to use it already. Some of these companies still offer them. The big box stores may have them, or you can go online and call Dell and special order a Windows 7. I think you'd be better off Windows 7, frankly, than Windows 8. It's a challenge because computers don't really wear out. The hard drives die, but you get a new hard drive in there. The problem is that the world moves on, and that computer guy obviously wanted to move Gene on. I can't believe first of all, he knows perfectly well that you haven't used a computer in an hour, we're going to log you out message. It's not a virus, it's AOL. Second of all, for him to remove the AOL icon from the desktop and say, use Internet Explorer instead, is just not right. It's just not right. I understand why he feels that way. He'd love Gene to kind of move on to the future, but you know, you have to have some respect for how people are and how they want to use your computer. If she likes the AOL app, keep using it. Now, it won't be much longer before, I wouldn't be surprised if AOL pulls the plug on that. But at least for now, keep using it. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the number. Why don't you write that down, actually? And when you're doing that, write down this, techguylabs.com. That's our website. James DeRuvo's been writing as I speak and writes everything down, puts the links up there. Understand that's the rough cut. Then our Josh Windisch in my office goes through it all the next few days. He takes a video of the show, puts it on the page. You can go question by question, listen to the question, listen to my answer. You can add your comments to it, and I hope you will, because that makes it more valuable. If you have a thought for Gene, for instance, go to the website in a couple of days. The question and answer pair will be there on audio and video. And the comment form, and you could say, Gene, what about this? What about that? And then, Gene, you go to techguylabs.com in a couple of days, and you'll get some more ideas. And all of this is free, always. We don't charge for it. Techguylabs.com. I hope you have a great Geek Week. Good luck with your taxes. I'll see you next time. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows and Windows Weekly, Macintosh and MacBreak Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.